Hospitals in multiple regions of Wisconsin are running low on ICU beds. We have a renowned epidemiologist giving us a glimpse at what the latest Delta surge means and where COVID numbers are headed. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and it is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. I'm here with Jay Carlisle Larson. Hi, JC.
Good morning.
You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting discussions, and we rely on you to keep programs like The Morning Show going strong.
Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs, for shows like The Morning Show, everything you hear on the Ideas Network. That's why your gift of any amount right now makes a really critical difference. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 20 donors. Thank you to everyone who gave. Our goal this hour is to get another 20 gifts.
And help pay for the programs you rely on. Be one of those 20 when you give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And you know, you are powerful because people who listen, you provide the most significant share of funding for WPR programs. It's your donation that is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and your entire community. So give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
No doubt you would agree. We live in a complex world. You rely on Wisconsin Public Radio to turn complicated issues in the news of the day into understandable language so you know how things will affect you.
For you to get programs that are relevant to your life, we rely on your financial support. It is the largest source of our funding. That's why we ask that if you've never given before, maybe make your first ever contribution now of $10 a month or $120 during this fall member drive at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I think it's a great business model in that it operates using donations from people and donations from corporations. It works. I'm happy to donate because I think it's so important. And I'm happy to donate more because I know there's some people out there that can't. It's just great company in the house. I'm Mary from Menominee, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for everyday listening.
Join Mary, give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer Kent here with Jay Carlisle Larson. Listener support, it's the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this fall member drive is so critical. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe you set it at $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
And we know that you value your time. And trust us, we value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes. Tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Super quick, super easy, and your gift right now, it truly helps. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have about 50 minutes left this hour, and we're looking for 11 more people to join in. You make WPR possible when you give. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And how about support Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for the new WPR baseball cap? It has the WPR logo on the front, and then you show off your public media pride wherever you go. Ask for yours with your gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's really easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and you will provide reliable support for programs just like The Morning Show that you love.
Jeremy in Cambridge says, I'm calling to donate because I just thought it was time. It is time. Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org. And thanks. Now to the pandemic. Is the Delta variant peaking? And what comes next in this battle? President Biden spoke before the UN General Assembly earlier this week, calling on global leaders to address COVID by seeing our common humanity and acting together.
We're mourning more than 4.5 million people, people of every nation, from every background. Each death is an individual heartbreak.
What do you want to know about the next phase of this pandemic? What about kids and the vaccine and the boosters? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Michael Osterholm is a professor and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. He's an international leader in the field of epidemiology. Michael Osterholm, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with booster developments. The FDA authorizing a booster dose of the Pfizer vaccine for people 65 and above, other groups of people who may be at high risk as well. But they rejected a COVID booster en masse for everyone who's older than 16. What do you think about this move, and who is in this group of boosters?
Well, first of all, let's take a step back and just try to understand where we're at with this vaccine in general. I think there's been a lot of confusion about, wait a minute, does this vaccine really work? Does it not work? What's the situation right now? Why do some people get a booster? Why do some are not yet recommended for a booster? Which vaccine did I get? Does it work? Does it not work? If your head's swimming with all of that, welcome to the club. But I think the first thing to really understand is that when we began looking at vaccines as this pandemic emerged, we were hopeful that if we could get a vaccine that even protected 50% of the time against this new coronavirus, that would be a really successful vaccine. That was the expectation that actually led the FDA to say that they would license a vaccine at 50% protection. Well, then the messenger RNA vaccines, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, proceeded through its research and found that, oh my, this vaccine was up to 95% effective in preventing in those first weeks after the two doses against infection and clinical illness. Now, remember that we were rushing to get these vaccines out with the understanding that safety was paramount. We had to be sure that these vaccines were safe. So there were never any shortcuts taken relative to safety. But the other bucket of issues that we had was how to best use the vaccines. How much do you put in a dose? How much of that antigen material or virus material do you put in the dose? How much of the protection will come from a spacing of the doses, whether it's at day one and then 3 weeks or 4 weeks later, or in some cases, maybe 10 weeks later, as they did in England and Canada. And it turns out that the immune system is like the human body in general. If I were a marathoner and I ran a great marathon today, but then you told me an hour later I'd run a second one, I might not do as well. And then if I had to do a third one an hour after I finished the second one, I surely wouldn't do as well. Well, the immune system is kind of the same way. What we find is that when we challenge it with a vaccine, sometimes you have to give it some period to recover before you can get the next big response. Well, what we were doing with the vaccine, we wanted to get it out as quickly as possible. So we made these very short intervals between dose spacing of 3 and 4 weeks. And then at that point, of course, as I said, we had these very positive results. Well, now what we're finding, and it's not a surprise, this is what I call corrected science. Science is always self-correcting. It's learning, it's implementing, and then watching, and then learning, and then implementing. And what we're seeing now is that, in fact, at 6 to 7 months after these initial doses for at least the mRNA vaccines, we see waning immunity, meaning that the protection that we had in those first days after the second dose is actually waning a bit. It's not there.
Do you know how much it's waning?
Well, that's part of the challenge, is because we're just at the beginning of that 6 to 7 month period for most people. Remember, if you think back to the vaccines rolling out in January and February, who got them first? The older population, healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. But we didn't even get to the 40s and 50-year-olds and even down to the 30-year-olds until much later in the spring and the summer. So we're still really learning about that. And that's one of the reasons why this will be a recommendation in flux in a way in terms of what's happening. But what we found with the third dose, and this is data that came from Israel and from laboratory studies we're seeing, is the fact that you get a major boost. It's kind of the fireworks boost of the three. So people call this a booster dose. I like to think it's actually now what's clear. We need a three dose prime series. In other words, like a lot of other vaccines, if I go get my hepatitis vaccine right now, I get it now, I get another one, I get it one a year from now. And I think they're seeing the same thing here is that ultimately one day this will be a three dose vaccine for most people. So the recommendations that have come out are really observing these early waning immunity kinds of situations. And that's why the initial recommendation was made for those who are older, because clearly they do have waning immunity just by being older for a lot of vaccines. And then in addition, they were the first ones out of the chute to get vaccinated, so we have more experience with them. So I think just to clear it all up, let me just say this is my projection. Maybe wrong, but I think within a 3 or 4 months, we'll be doing additional doses for Pfizer, for Moderna, and for the J&J vaccine. That'll go from one dose to two doses. The other two will go to three doses. And then I think that those doses actually will provide potentially long-term protection and surely very good protection. So even the breakthrough cases we're seeing today, if people get these additional doses, will be decreased dramatically.
We have longtime epidemiologist Michael Osterholm, directs the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. What do you want to know about the Delta strain, other strains to watch? Do you have questions about masking or boosters? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network. We're taking stock of the pandemic with a renowned epidemiologist, getting at all your COVID questions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now let's turn to our fall membership drive. I'm here with J. Carlisle Larson, and our goal is to keep you bringing informative news you can trust about the pandemic. Your support makes that happen because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. So give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have less than an hour left in the morning show today, and we're looking for about 11 people to join the WPR team. And of course, a big thank you if you've already given.
And if you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
When you listen to the Ideas Network, you make your community a better place because you're an engaged, informed citizen. When you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're doubling the good that you do.
That's right. And that's because WPR is listener funded. It means that your financial support is what makes this incredible service available to you and to the entire state. So do something amazing right now. Help make the Ideas Network possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a great way to support Wisconsin Public Radio is by becoming a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you're going to make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
And many people give $10 or, say, $20 a month. You choose whatever amount is right for you. Become a sustainer now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you for listening today. Wisconsin Public Radio is in their pledge drive. Your donation is an important part of making programs like Science Friday and all the other shows you enjoy on WPR possible. So please make your pledge now. Here's how.
That's right. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Jay Carlisle-Larson. Your support during this fall member drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
And Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it. But when you do choose to support it, you make all the WPR programs you enjoy possible, just like the morning show. So how about a gift of $10 a month?
That's right. You decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for more people to join the WPR team. We have a little more than half an hour left. We are looking for 20 people this hour. We're already getting there really quickly, but we want you on the team too. WPR is listener powered, which is why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And you can support the program you value and show off your WPR pride when you ask for the new WPR baseball cap. It'll be your new awesome accessory no matter where you go. Wear it with pride. Give $10 a month or more. Ask for yours now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Stephanie in Trevor, Wisconsin says, I am grateful for the insightful news and analysis that we can rely on every single day. And Diane in Sheboygan says, I'm donating today because I've been putting it off for way too long. Better now than never, of course. Join in right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. Really, you get to choose the amount.
And we appreciate your support. Now, the Delta surge may be peaking nationally, but that's not the case here in Wisconsin, where ICU beds are running low and we're not leveling off yet, according to state health officials. As the Biden administration got the go-ahead to start rolling out some COVID booster shots next week, we have University of Minnesota epidemiologist Michael Osterholm fielding your questions about the pandemic and what the next phase looks like. Conversation here, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Russ in Stoughton with a question. Hi, Russ, go ahead.
Hi, I'm about to turn 75, and I've heard different information about how long you should wait between your initial vaccination and booster shot, whether it's 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. And my other question is, I've heard different comments about whether the booster shot you eventually get, does it make any difference as opposed to what your initial vaccination medicine was?
Gotcha. Can you mix and match? Can you get Moderna or J&J if you got Pfizer the first time? Michael Osterholm.
Yes. Well, first of all, congratulations, Russ, on the fact you got your initial vaccines. That's a very important protection that you've given yourself. In terms of the booster timing, right now the recommendation is at 6 months. Clearly, we have evidence that through that time, the protection is quite good, even if it starts to wane towards the end of that 6 month period. So that will really give you the best third dose boost if you had an mRNA vaccine. And as I said, I do think that within weeks we will be seeing data supporting the J&J vaccine for a second dose. So if that was your vaccine, you'll get a second dose. In terms of the mix and match right now, we don't have the data to actually support that you can mix and match, although we believe it's surely possible with the mRNA vaccines in particular. But so I would say, as the recommendation will be made, stick with whatever you had. So if you started out with Moderna or you started out with Pfizer or J&J, get your booster dose within that same vaccine. And all three of them with that booster will really substantially increase your protection.
Russ, thanks. Let's go to Jeff in Houghton, Michigan. Jeff, what is your question regarding younger children?
I'm curious when they feel there'll be adequate data to show the safety of the vaccines on younger children.
Well, thank you for that. As a grandfather of five kids between the ages of 4 and 11, I have an intense interest in that very same question. So it's a very important one, and particularly given that we're now seeing really, unfortunately, major challenges with our schools. Here in Minnesota, we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of school-related outbreaks, particularly in the 5 to 11-year-olds, although we're seeing it also in the 12 to 17-year-olds, where they are now approved for vaccination, and yet only half of them have been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. But to get back to your question in terms of the younger children, 11 down to the 5-year of age group, I expect you're going to see within weeks approval of that vaccine for the Pfizer vaccine doses, and hopefully not long after that, the Moderna vaccines. So just hang on. And then also we're looking, of course, at then even going lower in ages down to the 6-month level. And I think that's something you're going to see late fall, early winter, where we'll have sufficient data for approval. We don't have reasons to suspect it's a problem, but you know, we have to be obviously very, very careful in any kind of safety issues around kids. And so, you know, a great deal of effort is being made to make certain that that's not a challenge. We also have to get the dosage down, meaning there's no reason to give children a much, much higher dose than they need to get the maximum immune response. And so one of the challenges is actually what we call dosing studies, looking at different doses in kids. And that, too, will be completed and part of this approval process.
The wearing of masks has become so heavily politicized. Are the masks helping, and are we wearing them correctly?
Well, first of all, let me just start out by saying I am very, very pro-mask, pro-respiratory protection, but I'm all about quality masks. And what we've allowed ourselves to do is get caught in this debate of yes, a mask, no, a mask. And it's become a political symbol. We don't have a discussion about what do they really mean. You know, our group was, I think, one of the very first in the country, not the world, to really strongly emphasize the importance of realizing this virus is transmitted by an aerosol. Aerosols are these very, very tiny particles that float in the air. So when I'm breathing out, out comes these aerosols. And if you want to get an understanding of what an aerosol is like, imagine somebody smoking in a room. Smoke is, in a sense, is an aerosol, the way it floats in the air. If I could smell that from somebody 5, 6, 7 feet away from me, you know, if they were breathing out virus, I would be breathing in their virus, just like I would their smoke. And so one of the things we have to do is find what kind of respiratory protection will prevent that from happening. Well, it's part of an entire comprehensive program. We need better building ventilation. We need filtration systems. I can go on and on. Masking is the very lowest of the effectiveness levels in terms of actually making a difference.
And Dr. Osterholm, we have to pause right here for a news update. We'll get back to this next after a news update on the Ideas Network. Is your mask doing its job? What will happen to COVID spread this winter? We're tackling all your pandemic questions with a leading epidemiologist on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now let's get a check on our fall membership drive at WPR. I'm here with Jay Carlisle-Larson, and we're here to say, as a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something interesting when you join in, and that is thanks to your support. Listeners provide the largest share of funding for WPR programs. When you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make The Morning Show and everything else you hear on WPR possible.
We have less than a half hour left on The Morning Show today, and we are still chugging along looking for more people to join the WPR team. Your gift right now is so important, because when you give, you support the programs just like The Morning Show that you tune in for every single day and even participate in.
Well, thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, this hour we are learning more about the COVID-19 vaccines that are out there, from Pfizer to Moderna to Johnson & Johnson and more, especially as news about their efficacy and whether or not they're waning just a little bit as we are, you know, further into the pandemic. you know, we are answering your questions. We are taking a deep dive here. And, you know, these are the kinds of conversations that you count on the morning show every single day.
That's right. WPR is listener supported. And it means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It makes the many topics that you join us for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
You know, Kate just said, choose an amount that works for you. And that is true. Everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that might be $100 or $200 a month.
And maybe that's what you pay for cable or perhaps your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day. So put a value on it, like other things that are important to you in your life, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I would say that if you really enjoy public radio and you listen to it even occasionally, if it does something to enlighten you on a certain point of view, then that is value. It's valuable. But nothing in life that is of value is truly free. Being a sustaining member, even if you just donate a small amount each month, you know, what it would cost you for a cup of coffee is really, really worth it if you believe in what they're doing. And I do. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Join John. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with J. Carlisle Larson. It's your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio that keeps all these programs you enjoy going strong. And whether you set your contribution at $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we truly count on your gift.
And you get to join your friends and neighbors who believe in the value of WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of more than 50,000 members to make Wisconsin Public Radio as good as it can be.
Wow. And when you make your gift and join this community at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you'll be doing your part to make sure that the news and the information you need is here every day.
Support Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for the new WPR baseball cap. It's got the WPR logo on the front, and you'll be showing off your public media pride wherever you go. Ask for yours with a gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or when you call 888-202-2552.
Heard from Bruce in Fitchburg, who says, I listen to WPR every day, glad to always support it. Thank you, Bruce. Susan, as well in Fitchburg, says, I love listening to WPR daily and hearing the calming non-cable TV voices. Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org, and thanks. And now to the pandemic. The Delta variant's ability to spread more easily has led to a surge in infections among kids because it's more contagious. And in much of northern and central Wisconsin, almost all ICU beds are full, according to the Wisconsin Hospital Association. We're looking at all aspects of fighting this crisis with your questions front and center. Conversation is at 800-642-1234. Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm is a professor and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Osterholm, you were talking about masking and basically how we can use these masks effectively and the aerosols. And we've seen intense debate over whether kids should be wearing masks in school.
Yes, and as we were discussing, what we need is quality masks to basically deal with these aerosols. And if you look at someone in a room who might be infected and you're in that same room with them in close contact, before Delta even showed up, this was the estimate of how infectious that situation might be for you relative to having or not having any kind of face cloth covering or a mask on. It takes about 15 minutes in a room breathing that air to get an infectious dose, enough virus that would actually infect you. Well, now imagine if you had a face cloth covering on, one of these things you just put on your face. You only buy about five more minutes of protection than if you didn't have it on at all. If you wear a procedure mask or a surgical mask, you get about 10 minutes of additional protection. If you wear an N95 or a KN95 respirator, but not fully fitted, meaning specifically tested on your face, you still get about 2.5 hours of additional protection. And if you have a fitted N95, you actually get about 20 hours of protection. So you can see the big difference there between what we've all labeled as one category of masks. And what we have emphasized is we need to get away from that. We need to talk about what kind of respiratory protection. We know that kids today can wear N95s, more specifically KN95s, a product that comes from Asia, but that one that seems to fit well. They have good face fit sizes for kids. And so we really strongly urge that we stop talking about masking, but really talk about what kind of protection. And kids should be using these KN95s at the very minimum, as well as adults using N95s to protect themselves.
I would imagine, as well as how to put on and take off a mask, how to maintain it, or when it is no longer, you should no longer be wearing it because you've used it too long. I mean, these are all really important questions.
Well, in fact, that's very important. And the concept of face fit and filtration is what's really key, meaning that it's a combination of how well does it fit around your face, how tight. You know, it's like swim goggles. When's the last time you leaked a swim goggle in the glass? You leak it in the sides around the face. And the same thing is true with filtration. And the reason why N95s and KN95s work as they do, this is actually a blown material. It's not just a piece of cardboard paper-like material that some people think. And it has a large pore size, so it lets air come in and out regularly. But at the same time, the virus gets trapped because of an electrostatic charge in there. So rather than just the virus coming through too, and that's why these are so different than the typical cloth masks you see. The other thing is, you pointed out how you wear them. We've been doing a study where since the beginning of the pandemic, we've been actually evaluating frozen frames of news stories where in public, you see a number of people. And we have consistently seen in looking at how they're wearing masks or face cloth coverings, et cetera, that about a quarter of the people routinely always put it under their nose. Well, this is like a chin diaper. As I say, it's like fixing 3 of the 5 screen doors in your submarine. You know, it doesn't really do any protection at all. And yet people think they are now protected or they're not transmitting the virus because they have their mask on, when in fact it's not effective at all.
I want to ask you something you've been concerned about in the dangers of shifting baselines, people just becoming, you know, numb to the suffering of COVID and having it present, circulating in our communities. What are the dangers of this acceptance?
Well, it is, in fact, a challenge in that, you know, people were really done with this pandemic in May and June. And the country had decided we were over it. We had gotten down to less than 10,000 cases a day. And hospitalizations were dropping, vaccines were rolling out. And then, of course, we hit that stall on the vaccines. We got to about 70% of Americans having a single dose. And basically, we've had a very hard time getting the additional people vaccinated. There's today over 70 million Americans who could be vaccinated who are not, which is more than enough human wood for a coronavirus forest fire to burn through. Trust me. Mm. Now, when we look at the issue of baselines, you know, we're at 10,000 cases in June. Today, we're at 140,000 cases a day being reported. We're at over 2,000 deaths a day being reported. And what I fear is that basically we'll just assume that, okay, if we even get back down to 100,000 or 80,000, you know, that's a lot better than we were at 160,000. But it's surely far short of what we could do if we had everyone vaccinated. I could see a day where we could be reporting fewer than 1,000 cases a day and, you know, basically fewer than 100 deaths a day if we just would get people vaccinated. But we all know the social, political challenges that face us with that very issue of people not wanting to get vaccinated.
We're talking with epidemiologist Michael Osterholm at this phase in the pandemic. The COVID response plan that President Biden unveiled earlier this month, it looks to dramatically increase the access to rapid tests. What do you think of getting these rapid turnaround tests in people's medicine cabinets?
Well, it's both a positive, I think, and potentially a negative. And what I mean by that is that from a positive standpoint, if I could find out today that I'm infected before I leave my house, even though I'm not necessarily clinically ill yet, but I could be infected and infectious and going to get sick in a couple of days, that would surely help cut down on transmission. The challenge is getting people to use that type of test when, in fact, today, when you can't get people vaccinated, we can't get people to do a lot of things. The question is, among those who need it the most, are they the ones that are likely to use it? The negative side of it is that the tests have some accuracy problems in the sense that you'll sometimes find yourself positive when you're not, but often, many times, you'll find yourself negative when you really are not. And that would give people a false sense of security that then therefore, you know, I don't have to worry about whatever I'm doing that seems to work. Mm. And so we're challenged on that. The second part of that is that we're seeing more and more of these over-the-counter tests that are being used, and we don't get the results reported. No, you know, no one wants to self-report themselves to health departments. So we have a much more difficult time trying to estimate just how many cases are really occurring in our community. And I think that that has led to actually a substantial undercount of cases, particularly in younger adults who seem to be at this point more likely not to report their cases, which is something prior to this in the pandemic, we were getting laboratory-based test results reported to us. So this is also a challenge.
Let's go to Mike in St. Lawrence. Mike, hi. Oh, and Mike is no longer there. Ben from Bad River called in as well, couldn't stay with us, wants to know how often they should switch out their mask.
You know, if you're using an N95 respirator, as I said, which you can buy at any hardware store, either online, if you do get them online, make sure that you go to a reputable supplier. I have no stock in places like Grainger or, you know, equipment supply locations that sell these, and they are reputable in the sense that you're getting the company's official product, not a counterfeit. If you actually don't get these soiled, meaning you're not get them covered with body fluids, you know, blood in the healthcare setting, you don't get a lot of dust in terms of what where you work or where you're at, you can wear these for actually many, many days. And it's when they start to potentially break down and how well they seal on your face, then you need to consider getting another one. But, you know, I've often heard people say, well, I can't afford that. One of these N95 respirators today sells literally for $1, $1.50, and you can use it for many days, and it offers a very high level of protection.
Are you worried about other virus strains besides Delta and what mutating might mean for the efficacy of these vaccines?
Well, this is a really important point. As we know, we call these variants. These are the mutated forms of the virus. And every time the virus reproduces itself, it has basically a defective reproduction. It doesn't quite copy what it was before. And some of these mutations are lethal to the virus or not helpful, but other ones actually give it an advantage. And where variants have become a challenge with humans is, one, are they more infectious? Two, do they cause more serious illness? And three, can they evade immune protection from either natural immunity acquired from being infected or from vaccines? And we've been concerned clearly about that third bucket very, very much about could we see a variant develop that would no longer make the vaccines effective for us? And what we see, have seen several of these variants develop like that, but in every case, the more infectious variants, the ones that are much more transmissible, seem to win. They are king of the hill. And Delta is just that. So there's been a new one called Mu that we've heard about, Lambda, others like that, that could be challenges. But in every case, when Delta comes up against them, it wins. And so I think that the infectiousness issue will continue to be very important. And not that we won't keep our eye on all new variants, what we call variants of concern. I think right now it's going to be hard to knock Delta off the top of the hill.
Do you have a sense of when the Delta variant may peak in the upper Midwest region, in our region?
You know, I don't. It's been a very fascinating situation. The surge we're seeing right now is unlike any we've seen before in this country. It started out in what I call kind of chapter one, in far northwestern Missouri, or Arkansas, southwestern Missouri, in the Ozarks. And that happened in early July. Then there shortly after kind of chapter two, we saw the southern Sunbelt states from Florida over to Louisiana light up. And then we had a chapter three, where then we started to see the southeastern states, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kentucky, that Tennessee light up, as well as the Northwest, Washington and Oregon. And then kind of then we saw chapter one and chapter two countries kind of level off and start to drop. But now what's happened is the virus has continued to kind of make its way up the East Coast. And right now, West Virginia has the highest number of cases per population in the country. We're now seeing increases in southern Ohio, in southern Pennsylvania, the Northeast, which is the most heavily vaccinated region of the country, are now across the board. All the states are beginning to see 20 to 40% increases in cases over 40 days. And we're seeing the same thing in the upper Midwest. Wisconsin right now has had an 82% increase in cases over the last 14 days, a 6% increase in hospitalizations. And so I don't know. Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, Illinois, all are now part of this increasing occurrence here. One of the things we're seeing, Shirley, is schools are driving a lot of our transmission in Minnesota.
Dr. Osterholm, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael Osterholm is a professor and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with J. Carlisle Larson, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting and thoughtful conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
Listener support is the largest piece of the funding that makes the morning show and every show you hear on the Ideas Network possible. But that's why your gift at WPR.org or when you call 888-202-2552 is so important.
And we're feeling such an amazing glow at this moment. We have actually exceeded our goal, but you can still join in and also feel this great glow of just making a difference. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered. That means your donation right now really does make a huge difference. While we surpassed our goal, help us just continue to go past it. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, we've been hearing the latest news and really important information for one of the world's leading epidemiologists, Dr. Michael Osterholm from the University of Minnesota, and you being able to join in with your questions about mask wearing and about vaccines and boosters and where we are at with this pandemic. These are really important conversations, and they're the types of conversations you count on from The Morning Show.
And WPR is listener supported. That means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible, from COVID-19 to state politics to learning more about Wisconsin's cranberry season. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And how about ask for the WPR baseball cap? It's tan colored, compliments all styles, can go wherever you go. Bright WPR logo on the front, and your support for the programs you love will shine wherever you go. It starts with your gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My life would be diminished without Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, I wouldn't want to do without it.
It's just a comfort to me to have it on while I'm making dinner. And it
gives you a whole different perspective on things.
Many, many times I've listened to the radio and it's made me laugh or cry.
Wisconsin Public Radio is my source
for connecting to the world.
For everything I like to hear on the radio.
For everyday listening.
That's right. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer Kent here with J. Carlisle Larson. Listener support, it's the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this fall member drive is so critical. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe you set it at $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
You hear us talk a lot about the goals during these member drives. And while this hour we blew past it, thank you so much for all your support. If you haven't given now, it's still a great time. Support the morning show and make your donation now. Maybe $10 a month, maybe $100 a month. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to join the Wisconsin Public Radio team.
Mark in Suamico is giving a shout out to Central Time, to 1A, The Morning Show, Dr. Zorba. Need I say more? Mark asks, quality programming we count on. WPR is the real steal. Your gift right now is so important. We love your comments. Keep them coming. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support.